If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello there and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, your weekly Sex and the City podcast where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. As ever, you are listening to Juno Dawson, Dylan B. Jones, and this week we're so excited because we're joined by one of my absolute faves. It's my good friend, the writer and now television presenter and campaigner, it's Miss Charlie Craggs. Hiya,
Charlie. Hey! How are you?
Hi.
I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, actually. I feel like I'm coping with lockdown better than everyone I know just because I had no friends in school, so I'm used to being on my own. I had 7 years of training for this. I'm good. This is a walk in the park. How are you both coping with it?
Yeah.
All right.
Must be nice right. If I had friends in school, guys.
That's what you get.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
I think what I've realised in the last couple of weeks in particular is the privilege of being in a relationship during lockdown, which is, don't get me wrong, I've missed my friends, I miss all the work stuff that I used to do, but there's always been someone, you know, even though, you know, sometimes it's been quite difficult, you know, I've never once have I been by myself, and I keep thinking back to, there are people who have lived by themselves pretty much for a year now, and I don't know why it's taken me nearly a year to recognise the enormous privilege of being in a relationship during the pandemic Lovato, but yeah, so that has really hit home, so I'm feeling quite grateful, and hopefully now, by the time we're listening to this episode, the end should be in sight.
Oh, wow. What a thought.
We've said it before, though.
We have said it before. We'll see.
Yeah.
And, of course, it has been an absolute pleasure spending season 3 with our listeners to get us through lockdown 3. It has been a gift, and your messages have cheered us up no end. And so thank you for joining us. And of course, we come to the season 3 finale. It's cock-a-doodle-doo.
Oh,
and God. We've been running this podcast for nearly 2 years now. Right at the beginning, Dylan and I said, right, who do we want as guests? Right, obviously Charlie Craggs. And we were like, but wait. There is only one episode that Charlie can come and do.
I was offended because I told you when you first sprang out, I was like, yes, this is the best thing ever, and I followed and everything, and then I was like, they're asking everyone but me, like, I'm here, I'll do it for free, like, I'm down, and I'm like, why are they not asking me? But it makes a lot of sense now. So I waited 3 seasons and I'm ready.
It was like just like the great writers of our time. You plan your twists, and we all knew at the end of series 3, that's when Charlie Craggs is going to arrive.
This episode has been hanging over us, like, for the whole... Because season 3 is really fucking good.
Yeah.
But, like, we just knew that it ended with this.
Yeah.
So
go on, Dylan, give us a potted synopsis.
Okay, so Carrie's getting back... We're not getting back together with, but she's meeting up with Big for like the first time in a while, and Miranda is, I think rightly, like, not happy, and is like, look, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to hold your hand through this again, but we'll get to that. And they get in an argument. Charlotte and Trey have broken up, so Charlotte's dealing with the fallout from that, and the women, the 4 ladies, are being really supportive of her, and Samantha has some noisy neighbours, shall we say. Yeah, the turf jumped out.
The turf jumped all the way. So let's do... So I think a bit like when... Obviously, previously this episode, we also had to tackle race with Candice Carty-Williams.
Yeah.
It feels ridiculous to not get the elephant in the room dealt with first. So let's normally we start with Carrie, but actually this week I'm going to suggest hell to that. Let's start with Samantha, because it's really, really important for me to know that our listeners are watching that episode of television in 2021 and can recognise it's astonishingly transphobic. I just punched my face.
That's how angry,
Stop being transphobic to yourself, Juno.
I just assaulted myself by watching this episode.
That's what watching this episode has done to you.
Honestly.
I just sat and watched this episode with Max, and even Max was like my cisgender male fiancé was gasping. I must admit, do you know what? I knew this episode was bad, but I'd forgotten just how bad. So let's do it. You know, let's ring the alarm and let's address the transphobia. So to put it into context, if you've not seen the episode for a while, as we remember, halfway through the season, Samantha was hounded out of her building for being Fuckenstein, because her nighttime shenanigans led to the mugging of an old lady. And she left that building and moved to the trendy meatpacking district. But like any bitch who is actively gentrifying a rundown part of a major city, of course, the $7,000 a month apartments are, of course, in a place where there is also extreme poverty. And Samantha is sharing her new address with a group of transgender sex workers. So far, so good. And in fact, when she moves in, Samantha seems quite excited that there are transgender people in her neighbourhood. She waves to Willem, if we remember. But now they're keeping her up on a night. As someone who is quite precious about sleep, that's where my sympathy with Samantha ends with this episode. I don't like being disturbed on a night either. However, she doesn't handle it very well. You can handle transgender neighbours without being transphobic. Samantha does not do that. And neither do her friends, who respond appallingly as well.
That fucking... Is it brunch when they're all sitting around? Why do all the worst conversations... When they're all sitting around at brunch, like... Just every word of it. It was like, do you remember when we did the bisexuality episode with Essie? And Essie was like, I got whiplash from how bad it was. And I was like, the same with this. I was like, oh my God, and again, and again, and again, and again. And it's interesting. It was written by Michael Patrick King, a gay man who presumably had trans friends. Although from this episode, I'm thinking maybe not. Obviously we see how awful this is. Something I wondered, which you two might be able to shed some light on, is I wonder how transgender people saw this at the time.
I mean, it's hard to say. So when I first saw this, I would have been in university. I was so far off understanding what it was to be a trans woman. And it was piss poor representation like this that made it hard for me to recognise myself as a trans woman. Because I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing the three performers were cis men. I might check that in a minute.
I think there was a trans one because she had boobs and she died of cancer. It was at the end, the girl who's in like the little light blue tracksuit, like little thing. I don't know. But I read that she died and I read she was trans because she had a boob job. But the others were definitely, the others I'd say were cis, like Williams obviously cis and stuff.
So we have, I mean, what a role to play for her. You know, what happens when you get that script as a trans actress? And this is 21 years ago now. You know, I'm thinking of her contemporaries in the industry. You know, Candace Cain at that point had not appeared on Dirty Filthy Money. We had mostly cis men. We had David Duchovny playing trans on Twin Peaks. So usually when you saw a trans woman on television, it was somebody being played by a cis man. And at the time I didn't, when I was 19 years old, I didn't connect the dots that what what Carrie and Samantha were saying is wild. Like, Carrie repeatedly says they're half men, half women.
Mm.
You know, was our understanding of trans lives so shit 20 years ago that it was acceptable that that was that the mainstream's understanding of a trans woman? Maybe it was. Maybe that was genuinely what, you know, I mean, God, Charlotte even says, you know, what's a T word? You know, she doesn't even know what they're referring to. Oh, God, it's so difficult. You know, let's look at some other transgender representation of the 90s. We've got the actress Sean Young playing a transgender serial killer in Ace Ventura. We've got a cisgender man playing Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, my God.
It's you know, it was... You've got Kathleen Turner playing Chandler's dad, who they refer to as a gay man throughout. Like, nobody ever refers to Kathleen Turner as a trans woman in Friends.
I think the weirdest thing about... I'm just thinking about the conversation that they had. And the weirdest thing that I thought was said was when, and possibly the most telling, was when Miranda was like, I don't get the appeal there. Like, as if, I don't know, it was as if they had like chosen to kind of, they had chosen to do that in order to specifically appeal to men. And Miranda was like, oh, I don't get why men, why, do you know what I mean? Like, it was just such a, for me, that was the line that dated it the most, weirdly. I was like, that is just such a fundamental, that's just so fundamentally wrong on like so many levels. Girl. And just shows, yeah.
I had a list. I literally wrote down a literal list. I was like, let me get so I can come straight with my facts so I can say, like, because there will be people who play devil's advocate. Like, even I've watched it on YouTube. I was like, I'm not, because after this, personally, I couldn't watch Sex and City ever again. I bought the whole thing on box set as a gay, well, I thought I was gay at the time, teenager. And I got to this episode and I was like, I felt like these women were like my family at that point. Like, these women, like, I was really suicidal. I was pre-transition. I had no friends and stuff in school. I watched it and I felt like these women were my family. And then to see them, like, talking like this about, like, I wasn't out as trans at the time, but I was LGBT. And even pre-transition, even before I understood myself as trans, because I didn't really understand what trans was, like them in the show, I understood that there's right and wrong and that you just don't talk, like, this is our community. Like, though these women are gay icons, they are not gay themselves. They are not, Jimmy, you know, they don't have that right to be talking about people from our community like this. So I smashed up. I didn't even sell it. I didn't even go kex with it or whatever it's called, sex. I didn't even try and flog that. I was like, fuck these hoes. I am pissed. I was so angry. And it's like, I wrote down all the, and there's just so many. And it's like, I don't even know where to start. But like, it was, I think where to start for me is like the, because you could kind of watch the episode and think, wow, Samantha's the right bitch. Like, why is she being so mean to them? But, like, for me, it was the fact that the protagonist, Carrie, who's kind of the voice of reason, like, the narrator, she opened it being like, there they were, Samantha's friendly pre-op transsexual hookers. And it's like, and then it was half man, half woman, totally annoying. And it's like, well, where do we start? Because, first of all, how do you know they're pre-op? Did you see their dick? Like, how do you know? Why did you have to throw that in? Who, what the hell? Then it's like, the fact that she says they're friendly but then goes on to insult them, and then it's like the half man half woman thing that you've said that is a recurring motif throughout it, saying like Samantha knew how to get what she wanted from men and implying about them as well. It's like, oh, just like so many things. The fact that they allude to the fact that the men they like aren't straight, Samantha said these pseudo straight men from New Jersey. It's like, what? Like, I just don't know. I don't know where to start. So last night when you were like, can you watch the episode before we review? And I remember it. So I was like, I'm just going to, because I can't watch Sex and City now. It's like ruined for me. But I thought, I'll just watch the YouTube clip of this, all the kind of compilation of the transphobic bits in it. And I went in the comment section stupidly to see, like, I wonder how people are reacting to today. And people were literally like up to like, it's, I didn't read comments from like, maybe like, 8-10 years ago, but I thought from like 5 years on, like, because we've had the tipping point at that point with Laverne and Caitlin and everything, Janet Mock and you, Juno, and everything kicking off, like, so people have a better understanding of trans people. And even up to like 5 years, 2 years in the last year, people were commenting like basically trying to like gaslight trans people as if it's like not transphobic. Oh, it's just a TV show, stop being so sensitive. Oh, this isn't transphobic. Yes, Samantha, her man in bed was so hot. Da, da, da. Like, it's just like, I just couldn't believe it. And this is, if you think about who's watching Sex and the City on YouTube, it's girls and gay guys. It's not straight guys. So it's like, it's so hurt. It hurts my heart. It hurt. And I had to get in bed afterwards. I was like, can't even finish the rest of my day. I was like, I can't even do another email. I was so upset. It hurts.
And it's Tev, and you know, Carrie in 2 seasons' time has the gall to go to an LGBT ball with Amanda Lepore. How dare she breathe the same air as Amanda Lepore after this? But do you know what? I'm going to assume the worst of Michael Patrick King, I think. I think Michael Patrick King had not spent an awful lot of time with trans people because I don't think he could have written this episode otherwise. I think him and his bougie gay friends, who have recently moved to and gentrified the meatpacking district of New York, observed this like, oh my God, like, you'll never guess who lives in our neighborhood. Not just sex workers, but transgender sex workers. Because, of course, the episode is very anti-sex work as well. You know, and yeah, I mean, Samantha is horrible to them. Yes, it's annoying. I wouldn't want anyone screaming outside my window either. But it's that what's really striking, and now we would refer to it as punching down. Like, all of the sex workers are women of colour as well. You know, so we've got these four incredibly privileged women cackling their heads off at the notion of transgender sex workers. And I think it is as important as Charlie says, because 20 years later, yes, we've come on light years in terms of representation. And now I don't think there's anybody in the world who couldn't name a trans person. But we also find ourselves in a very different conversation, this very toxic conversation with TERFs, which if our listeners aren't aware, because I mean, actually, turfiness is quite a British thing. So if we have listeners from America or Australia, a TERF is short for, it's a trans exclusionary radical feminist. I don't really use TERF a lot because I don't think it's very feminist. I don't think excluding a group of very vulnerable women speaks of feminism. So I tend to just say they're transphobic or trans exclusionary. I don't think there's anything feminist about it. And the whole thing around transphobia in the UK, and particularly coming from women, because I think men just think we're gross and disgusting sometimes, and that's the kind of transphobia you get, like, lol, it's a man, lol, is that a wig? Whereas the conversation with transphobic women tends to be about, oh, you're half man, or, oh, do you have a penis? Or, oh, you know, and it very much challenging the notion of what is a woman and who gets to call themselves a real woman. That kind of representation is what has led us to this point now, you know, with this sense of their way. Charlie's right, you know, they were, rightly or wrongly, Samantha, Carrie, Charlotte and Miranda were feminist role models. You know, they got to set what a woman was. And for six seasons and 2 films, they set the agenda. A woman's right to buy expensive shoes, whether or not Miranda should become a partner, whether or not Samantha should be single, you know, whether or not Charlotte should give up work to marry a very rich man, which of course meant the concerns of minority women were never featured. The very specific concerns of women in poverty, the very specific concerns of women in sex work, the very specific concerns of Black or Asian women, and the very specific concerns of gay and transgender women were all but ignored by this show. And that is kind of the problem with still 20 years on holding Sex and the City up as some sort of feminist playbook. And
I think it's why what you just said just gave me a thought, Juno. I think it's because I was thinking about like Samantha's character, and I thought Samantha's character shouldn't be transphobic.
No,
she's not that person. So and the reason she is because it was like a rich, sheltered, middle-aged gay man writing her character. And that's why it's so important. And thank God it's happening a bit more now, but still not enough. That's why it's so important to have people behind the right people behind the camera and the right people writing shows. Because imagine how amazing this could have been if, like, Janet Mock had written it. Or, like, or like if you had written it. Or, like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah.
And at the time, that just wasn't possible. Janet Mock was stealth within the industry. At that time, Janet Mock couldn't even come out as a trans woman. She was she did not disclose the fact she was trans at the time, even though she was working in TV. I mean, we've changed. Things have come on. You know, just last week, and I would encourage, if you can, if it's still available on Now TV or wherever, is watch the most recent Euphoria special, which was co-written by Hunter Schafer, who is the transgender actress who plays the character of Jules. And there you have a 22-year-old trans woman musing really philosophically on what it is to be trans in the 21st century. You know, I've designed my whole life to appeal to men and now I don't want to. You know, really interesting conversations. We weren't there 20 years ago. And that's why, you know, there's lots of conversations around Harry Potter and, you know, read a different fucking book. If you're only going to read one fucking book for the rest of your life, you're just going to get the same stories about those three fucking white kids. You know, Sex and the City, we love Sex and the City, but for God's sake, watch something else as well. Because as we've learned, when it comes to race, sexuality and gender, this show is shit.
I don't think we should give Samantha too much credit saying I don't think that she would be, like, because we said, oh, I don't think she'd be transphobic. Well, maybe she would, because I really saw when I watched, one of the scenes that hurt me most was when they're at the party at the end, and you know, they throw as if to make it all better, they throw the little party. And what hurt me is how, And this is why I think Samantha would be that girl, is because I get treated this way now in 2021, or we've not been out of the house in 2021, but in 2020, I was still being treated by turfy women like this, where they would, or not even turfy women, just women, where they would, because what hurt was when they were all slagging off the trans girls across the route, like they were all standing in a different part of the, in the party, they were like looking at them and talking about them and saying, ugh, and like talking about them really, really rudely. And then the trans girl complimented Carrie on her dress, said, yes, Miss Thing, worked. And she clicked her fingers, and Carrie and the other girls had the cheek to be nice to their face and be like, oh, yes. And then clicking these white girls, these dry, cis, straight white girls, middle-aged, dry in every sense of the word, white girls, clicking their fingers at these women of color, trans women. And it's like, oh my God, this is literally how I and all my trans friends have been treated, where these posh, and the thing is, turfy stuff is a very posh thing, but these middle-class, dry women will like slag you off and think you shouldn't have rights and think you shouldn't be in the bathroom. But then when they see you, they'll be like, yes, oh, click my fingers, yes, hunty, stunty, mama, like, and it's like, it pissed me off so much, because I'm like, at least have the backbone to like call them a man to their face, but you're like, tell them, oh, I love, and the thing is, they'll accept all the compliments from them as well, like they won't even return them and be like, oh, you're fierce as well, they'll just be like, I know I'm fierce in my pussy, like, it's like, fuck off, Carrie. Like, I was so pissed off that they didn't attack, that I was like, please, I was like, I wanted Samantha to get dragged so bad, but even Carrie, even Miranda, like, I was just so, it's like, so, it just, that's the thing that I think hurt me the most, is because it's an experience I've had where like women will be like, think you're not the equal to them, but then they'll be like, so like clicky their fingers and talking like a drag queen to you.
I don't know if you've experienced this as well, and I don't know if Dylan has seen it out and about as well, which is, and again, a gay guy wrote this episode, which is some people, some gay men and some cis women regard trans women as very dedicated drag queens.
Yeah, yeah,
very dedicated. 100%. So like we're like some sort of subset of drag kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
Do you know what, with that rooftop scene, I have never hated them more than that, because they reminded me of the worst, and you will both know what I mean by this, and you've kind of just said it, Charlie, but like the worst people who you would see at a drag show were the four of them on that rooftop. And just when, like, do you know what pissed me off the most was when Miranda was like talking about the drink that she was having, and she was like, oh, her Destiny made it, and like laughed at the name Destiny, and I was just like, fuck you. Like, fuck you. I hate you, Miranda.
There's a whole other conversation to be had about Carrie's sudden shift into being a Latin American woman at the end. No.
So embarrassing. It's like prime turfness, and it's so weird because like this concept of turfness didn't exist when it was out, or even when we were watching it. Like I watched it like for the first time. I didn't watch Sex and the City when it was out, because I was like, I shouldn't have been watching that, but like, I watched it as a teenager myself. But even like 10 years on from then, like now, it's like turfness wasn't created, but like watching it, it's like, you are like textbook TERFs, like middle class women. Because let's think about it, TERFs are pretty much all middle class. Working class women, black women, people who have actual problems, are too busy worrying about who's using toilets, you know, that they have actual problems, not going to brunch and bitching about trans women. Like, that's all they have to do is go to brunch and bitch about trans people. And it's like textbook, like, oh, and they're not, I found hilarious as well. I had to laugh. Is Samantha being so grossed out? Remember the one the trans girls was like, if you don't take your dick out, she was talking out loud and saying, if you don't take your dick out my butt, I'm gonna shit on it. And Samantha went to breakfast, was like, she was looking repulsive. It's like, it's the most disgusting. Is that not the most disgusting thing you ever heard? And I'm like, Samantha, have you ever heard yourself in every other episode? Like, you got chucked out. You got chucked out of your house for being a slag. Like, you are the biggest slag. And good for you, because I'm a fucking slag myself. But like, how dare you, like, act with respectability politics? Like, oh, these disgusting trannies saying arse. And like, literally, we could quote like a million other more sexually disgusting things Samantha said. But coming from a cis woman who's like white and blonde and goes to brunch, it's okay. But when a trans girl says it, it was a whole mess. Like, at least be consistent. Messy.
There's nothing to be said. And this is the second time it's happened this season. The first time was with the bisexuality episode.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can say to redeem it. It's irredeemable. No. You know, it's transphobic. I think 99% of the people listening to this podcast will be like, fucking hell. There will be one person in the comments who is like, lighten up, honeys. And because they said the same thing when we criticised the bisexuality episode as well. And I remember once we must have mentioned J.K. Rowling on the podcast, and somebody was in our mentions as well. And I'm like, why are you listening to this podcast? It's literally 50% of trans women, you know.
It says so much that even in like the kind of Venn diagram of people who listen to this podcast, even then there are still people. Anyway, hi to those people.
No, bye to those people.
Bye.
The good news is, I think what we have to do is we need to just bench Samantha's storyline. And when we come back from the break, we're going to pretend that bit didn't happen. And we're going to talk about Carrie, Big, and some nice roosters. We'll be back in two minutes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, and welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. This week, we're talking about Season 3, Episode 18, Cock-a-Doodle-Doo, and with our special guest, Charlie Craggs. Okay, it's interesting that Samantha wasn't in this week's episode. What a strange episode. There was no Samantha storyline. Carrie, meanwhile, has a blast from the past in a scene which I actually really like because it's so excruciating. Miranda and Carrie run into Aiden and Steve. Awkward. Oh, yeah,
on the pavement.
Awkward.
On the pavement. And Steve's girlfriend looks doesn't look exactly like Miranda, but has short hair like Miranda.
He has a type. He likes a tall woman with short hair.
yes.
But this leads Carrie to have, surprise, surprise, Carrie has an existential crisis, which leads her to think, if our boyfriends are all moving on and we are still the ones who are around Charlotte's on a Friday night unpacking her books of self-help, she comes up with the question, is it us? Which I think is actually one of the best questions Carrie asks because it's so open-ended. And I think actually for the second part of this week's podcast, I quite like that now Dylan and Charlie and I are going to share with you our worst features, which, because maybe she's right. So this is a completely different context, but we have a friend who I adore very much, who is constantly having the same situation in their workplace. It keeps coming up time and time again. And it has become really, really clear that it's them. this situation, right. It keeps coming around. And after a while, you know, initially, oh my God, your boss sounds like such a bitch. Oh my God, that's awful. I can't believe your colleagues are being so unkind. It's them. And after a while, When you find yourself back to square one when it comes to a partner, after a while you do have to start thinking, is it me?
I'm just trying to think. I anticipated we would talk about this, and I'm trying to think if I've had experiences of this nature, realizing that it's me making the same mistake over and over again. And I think that I have. And it was dating people who were out on London's gay scene. That was the problem.
I think we could get Chris in to answer this question. What's wrong with Dylan?
What am I doing wrong?
And what about you, Charlie? What do you think you're doing wrong?
Well, I know we're not slipping up the trans thing again, but my thing was definitely linked to being trans, and in that I only realized it really recently, actually, like in the last year. I realized I was going for the wrong sort of guy, as in like kind of a bad guy. Like, I'm not even into, I actually like a good boy. I always liked a good boy. Bad boys don't really do it for me. But what did it about the bad boys and why I'd always go for them is that, and it's not even that they're necessarily bad, but I just mean, okay, how do I unpack this? But basically, like, boys where I'm from, so I'm working class, they're not even bad boys really, because I wouldn't go for, like, a bad boy. But boys like who live on estates like that I live on and stuff, I'd go for them because I realized, like, if they are proud enough to walk down the street, or not even the street, walk down their estate with me, and they're not, like, telling me to walk 10 steps ahead, it means that, I mean, people listening to this can only hear my voice, they can't see me, and my voice is horrible and manly, but, like, it meant that I knew I could pass, and that was really validating for me, and I was like, oh, like, that makes me, it let me know, like, that he saw me as a woman, it made me feel like the woman I am, and it's, like, I don't know, I felt validated by it, and it's, I kind of realized I was like, that's all they were giving me. Like, is that kind of validation, but nothing else. Like, I was happy in that kind of, oh, like he'll walk down this estate with me. But it's like, is that really what you want from a relationship / life, Charlie? Like, someone to walk in the street with you. How low is the bar? How, like, but honestly, that was enough for me. Like, until recently, I was like, that's, and it's just, yeah, I just kind of realized, I was like, oh, like, I'm like, I don't need that external validation anymore. I've kind of worked on myself, and I've kind of come to the understanding that, like, no, like, I don't care. which is, I don't know.
Is a stick a bit... upon the floor.
Yeah.
And only gas can slip underneath the stick. I will say the same, which is actually, that for me was the first test of trans dating, which is, if you will not be seen in a brightly lit daytime cafeteria with me, then we're not even going to get to see if there's more. So actually, I think don't sell yourself too short. I think actually that is, when you're a trans person dating, unfortunately, you do have to vet the ones who would keep you in the shadows for your own safety, which is if you've got a guy who's like, oh no, I will only come around to your house by the dead of night.
That is somebody
who is potentially going to kill you, you know, and that is the reality of trans women, which Samantha can't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
My issue, and I say this with a few years on both of you, was about Dylan and Charlie, both know me quite well. I'm really organized. Like, I have my pencil case packed the night before school, you know, and I inherited that from my mum. I'm very ambitious. I'm very sorted. My career is sorted. My life is sorted. I wanted my boyfriend sorted. And so I would meet some...
You were like Charlotte.
Yeah, I would meet someone and I'd be like, yes, you are appealing. You are my new boyfriend. This is what we're going to do. And rightly, they were like, whoa. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, my agent does what I tell her to do. Why would I tell you to do? And treating men like your employees is...
I mean, that's quite a mood.
Well, it was that episode where Charlotte decides to apply her professional outlook to her dating life was quite familiar. And so for me, I knew as soon as I had addressed this big issue of my gender, I was like, great, okay, now I'm ready for love because I love myself. So now I can find someone to love the woman I am. And So it really was a case of this can't happen fast enough. But of course, in the words of the wise prophet Diana Ross, you can't hurry love, you know, and it has to happen organically. And I think I did fall into that, and actually pre-transition as well. You know, if I met someone I liked, I would be like, let's lock this down. You know, let's really make this official, you know, go public on Facebook and you need to come meet all my friends and... No, chill. Because actually, a lot of them were really not great. A lot of them were not the one for me anyway. We had nothing in common or, you know, we're on different levels. And it was just kind of like, right, he's good looking and available. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if... So is it us? I think so. The answer, I think, is it's not us because we're amazing. I think that when you're younger, it's you, isn't it? But I think that the three of us have probably been around for long enough now that we know what the deal is and we know how to navigate things to do what's best for us. I think for the most part.
You and Chris were quite young when you got together, though.
Yeah. But then I had been dating since I was like 18, so
fair. I was a late starter in that I didn't really get going till I was 20, and because I went to university in Wales, that was a choice.
Girl, I didn't get started until I was like 23, 24. I was like, I'm not dating until I'm trans. Like, I knew I was trans and I was like, I don't want to date, I don't want to have sex. Like, I was like textbook trans, gold star trans. With this big man voice that brings me down a bit.
Gold star trans.
I hear that from a lot of younger trans girls, which is they want to get their transition sort of done first and then not deal with the dysphoria of kind of dating pre-transition. I was like a really, really late bloomer in that regard.
Thanks, Juno.
I'm joking. I didn't start my transition until I was 30 when I came out as trans. So
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you, bitch. You look really good.
Dead. Yeah. I turned 40 this year. It's terrifying.
Fuck off, Juno. You look incredible.
My nighttime routine is quite in depth. Maybe I'll start a separate podcast where I talk listeners through my skincare regime and the blood of virgins. I don't think it's us. but I think it's not us. Does that make sense? So, you know, so don't get me wrong, whoever you date, they're bringing all their bullshit to the table as well.
It's everyone. It's everyone. Yeah. It's everyone.
And of course, the next time we see Aiden, he's not still with Jessica.
Is he still wearing double denim, though, the next time we see him?
No, the next time we see him, he's lost about 3 stone and is wearing a suit.
Oh, yeah.
I actually, connect related, I really, really, really like the argument with Miranda and Carrie. I felt it rang really true. There comes a point where you lose patience. You can't keep having the same fucking conversation, even with your best friends. I've never picked a fight with my friend in a vintage clothing store that I'm aware of. I have every once in a while said to a girlfriend, "Girl, how is this happening again?" Kind of like,
yeah,
like he's not good. Like he's why? Or, you know, kind of like you can be so sympathetic. You say, "Look, you know what I'm going to tell you. You know, you need to put the credit card down because this is really dangerous now and you're in debt." Or, you know, there's a million ways you can have it, but it's not realistic that 4 women who spend as much time together as they do are never going to fall out about anything.
I think when someone in your life, whether it's a friend or a family member, says, has to get involved and be like, "Babe, I'm losing my patience," that's when you know it is you. Like when you know, like someone's getting, like if someone other than you is getting irritated at your situation, that's when you know, okay, maybe you are the issue. Like,
I think Miranda was right as well.
Yeah, for sure.
It's funny now because we've got the hindsight that we know big comes good. So I've like tried to rewind my brain back, and I remember at the time being like, "What the fuck? Was it not this season you told Big you needed a new word for over?" And yet, 8 episodes later, she's agreeing to go for lunch with him. I don't love the fall in the river. It's a bit...
It's very rom-com, isn't it?
It feels like it belongs in a different show.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. Well, Bridget Jones is... It's very Bridget Jones's diary.
Oh, my gosh, yes. So again, Max, my fiancé, who I've trained so well, at the scene where Miranda storms down to scream at a Chinese woman, Max just went, "White women." I was like, "Yeah!" I don't know how I feel about Miranda verbally abusing.
Also, she's a massive stereotype as well. The Chinese.
Yeah, she might as well have had chopsticks in her hair at this stage. Yeah. It was not great.
As a whole, white feminism. Like, I saw a comment on the YouTube video of the transphobic clip, and it was like, "This is like top tier white feminism." And I'm like, there's so many like clips when you watch Sex and the City back that you are like, this, they are really like very white feminists who are just like, there's so much like racial microaggressions, like trans, like even just, oh, just, yeah, very that, very, very
How
that.
How dare this woman who is bringing me food laugh? What a bitch.
It was when, I remember Juno said the same thing, didn't you, about white feminism when, was it some, one of them calls like a wooden chair oppressive or something, and you were like,
"Girl,
yeah, that is white, that's..."
Girl, oh my god.
That's right, that was Natasha. I don't know how you can like this clunky wood, it's so oppressive.
So oppressive.
Natasha is being oppressed by her furniture and no one else.
Oh my god, and actually this is the perfect segue into Carrie's final voiceover quote at the end, where she says, "Don't worry, they have a very lovely life."
No, they're probably murdered. Like, they were probably murdered. Realistically.
Yeah, like...
And no thanks to you, you fucking bitch. Like, yeah, they had a lovely life. No thanks to their fucking cunt neighbours who were, like, calling them men behind their back and, like, normalising transphobia on TV. No thanks to you, Carrie Bradshaw.
Don't call the cops on black people who carry guns.
Or don't throw water over them either. So rude. So,
oh, my God.
I just wanted them to get dragged so bad. They would have been dragged if this was real life. You can't be acting like the way they were acting to these girls. Like, you really think some like sex worker, trans sex worker, not even trans, like the amount of like shit these women have been through, that you think they're gonna take some shit from some posh lady coming outside her house? Like, oh my gosh, no ma'am.
Well, my dear friends, so we've gone irate. We have answered Carrie's question, but it's sad to me that we've had to finish season 3 on such a sour note. I think there will be listeners who have listened to this episode thinking that it was all a bit of fun. I hope, even if you think that we've gone in really hard, that you at least appreciate where it is we're coming from.
Girl, you think that was hard? Come to my Instagram after this goes up. I'll be going really hard. You think this was hard? When Dylan and Juno aren't, I'm not shouting in their ear, then we'll be going hard. How dare, like, I'm not even started.
Well, the good news is, so before we go, actually, we call this the plug slot. So, Charlie, I'm so, so excited because you're about to have a documentary on the BBC. What are you allowed to tell us? So this episode will be going out in like 4 weeks. So we will be in March.
Oh, it might be out by then, which is exciting. So yeah, it might be out already. So the documentary is called DIY Trans Teens, and it's about the kind of state of affairs right now in the UK, where like the waiting list for all trans people, but even more so for trans teenagers, is like, it's like 5 years to get a first appointment to even discuss transitioning. But it's painted in the media as you go to your GP, or young people, children go to their GP and next week they've got a vagina. So like, it's basically breaking down those misconceptions that are being painted in the media, and just meeting these young people and seeing what they have to go through, buying hormones online, like feeling suicidal. Like, it's hopefully just gonna just help the public see how things really are in just a really
How did you film all that during the pandemic? Was it really tough?
It was between lockdowns, so we'd have to still be masked up and do COVID tests and stuff. It was not a very fun experience, but we got around it that way, kind of by filming when we were legally allowed to. So get behind it on iPlayer, and they might show it on BBC One and annoy all the terse. Annoy Samantha. I'm sure she'll be at home throwing buckets of water at her TV.
Now, here's what I will say, okay, let's try tease something positive out. We have now seen the writer's room for the new series of... it's not called Sex and the City anymore, it's going to be called And Just Like That. And it is a much more diverse writer's room. It's young, there are women of colour, mixed with some more veteran TV writers as well. Now, I don't think this episode would happen now.
Of course not. They're not stupid enough.
I say that. But I think, do you know what? If it was some crap British, let's not forget, it's not that long since Graham Linehan wrote that horrific episode of The IT Crowd. You know, that episode of The IT Crowd where Matt Berry kicks the shit out of a trans sex worker was only about, I think, 8 years ago. So actually, it's not unthinkable that that level of bullshit would still happen. But I don't think it would happen on American TV, because I think American attitudes are actually more progressive. And I think, looking at who we're talking to now, you know, Cynthia Nixon has a trans child, you know, it's not gonna happen now, you know, and that's what's happened in the elapsing 20 years. Cynthia Nixon has a trans son, so it's not gonna happen.
I don't know if you know that
now. Sorry, go on.
Did you know that the reason she has a trans child is because of this episode? Like, God saw this and God was like, you don't know the appeal. I'm gonna fuck it. You want it? You die for it. I'm gonna give you the appeal. You're gonna see the appeal. Honestly, that's what happened. God, I'm a Christian, and God told me that's why He did it. You can tag her in this.
And on that note.
And just like that.
Oh
my God.
Charlie, thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Three seasons later. Thank you for having me, guys.
Charlie, whereabouts can we find you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me at Charlie_Crags on all social media platforms and Bumble, Tinder. you can find me at Charlie_Crags or on iPlayer. Watch my documentary, DIY Trans Teens.
And Charlie's book, To My Trans Sisters, is out.
Well done, Juno. Well. Thank you for doing my job for me. Thank you, babe.
Well, do you know what we should do, Charlie? We should get you to come back on and watch an episode that fills you with only joy. And one that doesn't have any flaming transphobia.
Yeah,
Charlie's done.
I'm done. I snapped those DVDs about 10 years ago. I'm done. Like, I've logged out.
But what? You should come back for the second movie. That'd be a good idea.
Yeah!
I have such a vision. What I want to do is, when it's finally time to do Sex and the City 2, I want to hire like the King Prince Charles Theatre in Soho and get on stage a panel of all our guests from the last 3 years, and just all of us just go in on that, to a light.
I Oh my God, please start a crowdfunder for that. That would be everything. It'd be so good.
So we've reached the end of season three. So as is customary, there will now be a short break while Dylan and I muster up the enthusiasm to watch more Sex and the City and talk about it every week. But actually, here's the secret. Dylan and I really love doing it, so I'm sure it won't be long. But during our little hiatus, stay safe, look after each other, and we will speak to you really, really soon. Until then, bye for now.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.